And I told you recently how awesome my wife is.
I'm sure you have, but you can tell me again if you feel like it.
Actually, you should tell her how awesome she is.
I think she is the awesomest ever. Well, second awesomest, because I have a pretty awesome wife, too. How about one and a half awesomest?
Okay.
So I think my brother's finally gonna bite.
You think so? Bite you? Bite what?
Oh, sorry. I think he's finally going to, with the price drop, I think he's finally going to go and pick up that 3DS. Now, for those who don't know, my brother lives in Japan, too, and he doesn't speak Japanese. So this
you
is,
do?
This is, hmm?
You do?
I get by. Like, okay. I could, like, read the cover of the game, though, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the thing is, I guess the price drop must be working because if he's considering buying one, even though it's, you know, region locked and he's planning to go back to America, you know.
Right.
Even with that, like, he's tempted now. There's enough interesting, you know, stuff to bring him in.
Wow. All right.
So, but now you actually live in the territory that your 3DS makes games for. Yes. So are you going to, what about you? Are you going to buy it? Are you going to jump in here?
I will. I have not done so yet, mostly for the reasons I've outlined previously, that I just don't have a good environment within which to play a handheld system. But it's like I was at spending $20 replacing a battery pack for my 360, and I was just walking around, and sure enough, just seeing that price cut just made me just kind of want to pick up a system right there. But it's not something I can really justify at the moment, but it's definitely on my radar now, and I think it's just a matter of time now before I bite myself. Not bite myself, but bite the
awesome
system. Oh, dear. Well, it's not
just
us.
You're not alone. You're not alone here. This is kind of crazy. Okay. I mean, these are sales from August 8th through August 14th that I'm going to tell you about right now. So
a couple weeks ago by the time this podcast comes out.
But like these are interesting data because, well, hold on, let me give you the week before it first. This is the week of August 1st through the 7th, basically. Okay. The sales were 4,132 systems all across Japan.
Okay.
That was selling like hotcakes. If it was a type of hotcake that was like poisonous,
and
slightly
cold.
Moldy.
Yeah.
And right. Even then, it still might sell more than that in Japan.
Right, possibly.
But, okay, any guesses? The next week. Mm. So this is the week right before the price drop. I mean, there were still people buying them to get the free games. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. So,
well, not free games, but whatever, the Nintendo Ambassador Program thingy.
15,000, maybe 20. Being generous.
Little higher, actually.
Okay,
50,000. Keep going. Keep
really? Because 50,000, that's over a tenfold increase. Okay. 100,000.
You know, you're going to have to actually go a little higher than that. You're going to have to go a lot higher. It's 196,000.
Whoa.
Can you do quick math for me? Let's see. Let's round it. So from 4,000 to like 196,000.
That's 49 times exactly the sales number from the week before.
That is crazy. So what is that? A 4,900% increase? Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
And it wasn't just that. The titles, well, I mean, none of the software is selling particularly wonderful on it, but Ocarina of Time went up 538%.
Oh, man.
But I mean, it was low already, though. So
yeah,
that actually equals a weekly sales of 31,000.
That's at the existing price. You know,
still.
There's no price cut there. That was just the systems pushing sales of the software, which is, you know, what you'd expect when you increase 4,900%.
Now, I mean, I haven't looked at sales figures recently. I used to be obsessed with them. I used to be on NeoGAF like a few times a day looking at sales figures rather than, I don't know, what did I used to do before that? Play games.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
But
back in
but
the
90s. But now I'm getting back into the, like, if I actually have enough time, I'm, you know, either recording this podcast or actually playing games. But
as we covered last week.
No, but I used to be obsessed with these sales figures type stuff. And right, maybe right. I'm interested now, too. Like, I'm not into math, but when something goes up in the thousands of percents, that's interesting to me.
I know, right? Yeah, it's like back when Nintendo was doing badly. All the time, you know, like for that decade, that lost decade or so. Yep. It was very interesting to us to like look at these stats and be like, see, they're not doing as bad as the Xbox in Japan this month. But now it's just like, now that they're down again, it's interesting to keep track of this stuff.
When you're a fan of a system, it's all about the games, even if your system's losing. But like when your system's winning, then it's like all about the numbers. Like,
right. So that's... That's 200,000 in 1 week.
Wii, even when it was having like crappy games, because it was like, oh, it's outselling everything. Yeah. That doesn't really matter, you know.
Yeah. That's just 1 week. That's the first week it's been out, right? So I don't imagine every week to be like that. But
the week after the price drop, someone told me it was either like the second or third highest week for the system ever. So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, well, so we'll see if they sustain it.
American statistics are a lot harder to get. Same with European ones. Right. There's not actually numbers out there except for like very rare occasions. You know, it's you can see it ranked, but not the exact numbers.
When you look at Famitsu USA, or one that people actually pay attention to anyway.
But the thing is, like, I'm getting there. I'm almost ready to buy it.
Excellent.
I mean, I'm saving up for the potential of going to Tokyo Game Show right now, but if I wasn't, I think I'm almost there.
Oh yeah, Tokyo Game Show. So so speaking of Tokyo Game Show, if you guys want to help us get there, we have our DVD. Awesomely, still use the promo code No Shame, which is funny because we're shamelessly plugging it right now.
Shame.
Shame. And you can get it for
Felicia Day.
$6.95 right now. And all your international listeners, just $6 in shipping. Everyone else, it's $3. So US and Canada, it's just $3. So you can get this disc for $10 all told. That's a pretty good steal, I think. And if you buy enough of them,
yeah,
you can go to Tokyo Game Show. We're going to go anyway, but it'll make it a lot easier to stomach.
Oh, man.
I got to fly from the States, so...
But like if we can get a couple DVD sales, we can not only go to Tokyo Game Show, but once we're there, actually, I don't know, like eat.
yeah, that'll help.
Like right now, this is going to be a very very bare bones trip.
But we'll have lots of good news regardless, and during the time that we can eat, we'll Japanese food's not too expensive. I can get by going to a bakery on like 500 yen, so.
But that exchange rate right now, it's like 76 yen to the dollar. That's
yeah,
crazy.
I saw that. By the time I actually get over there, I'm going to have to probably put a second mortgage on my house. But no, I should probably just get the money exchanged now because it's probably going to keep going up before we go. But yeah.
But regardless, the DVD, you know, we've plugged the DVD on the show before, but I don't think people actually realize. I mean, the people who own it, of course, know this, but a lot of the people don't actually realize what's on it.
Yes.
Because it says season one, but like you can watch season one on YouTube. Why should anybody buy this DVD?
Well, the stuff that you've already seen, we've cleaned up a little bit. There are some graphics that we sort of made look like later on in the season. So that's one small thing. So we did, it's not like a Star Wars type thing where we had like cool new explosions and made the NES shoot first or something. But we did add some stuff that was not available on YouTube. Our convention touring from 2008 is on there, just showing the kinds of shows that you can go to if you go to places like GeekCon in Madison this fall. Or I just got an email from Anime Milwaukee asking me to come back, which I'll consider doing.
Awesome.
If they make sure that the panel is on the same day, room, and time as they initially tell me. And DaishoCon, of course. These are all Wisconsin conventions, but I'm going to try and get one at MAGFest, which is in January and in the D.C. area next year. So we shall see what we shall see. So if you want to see us there, you should go to MAGFest and rock out. I'm going to be there regardless. But we also have our Tokyo Game Show footage, which also is available online from 2007. But we also have lots and lots and lots and lots of awesome outtakes, like 20 minutes of like deleted scenes, alternate takes, and more or less an alternate version of our Tokyo Game Show trip, which the more I think about it, should have probably been the version we put out. And there's also some Easter eggs hidden on there, including a return of a certain character. But it's, you know, apart from being stuff you might not have seen before, and apart from being higher quality than what we initially released to the net and haven't really updated so much, you know, it just supports this show and makes sure that we can, you know, do this podcast week after week, can go to awesome things like Tokyo Game Show and, like, you know, report to you high quality news and everything. And yeah, I still haven't released that clip of you dancing with that giant Sonic. That was on the show.
That can probably stay buried. also, what a lot of people don't realize is and for the people who already own the DVD, try this. Put it in your computer. You'll be amazed.
Yeah, there's a DVD ROM content on there as well. Next time we do a disc, I want to certainly add more to that.
but I mean, what do we have? We have a lot of the original drawings from
The Nintendo's Moxie episode. Mitch's awesome artwork.
And we have MP3 of the song. Mm-hmm. What else we got on there? We had a lot of stuff on there, don't we?
Yeah. There's also like promos for Powat TV shows, all of which are still ongoing. So if you haven't like seen Keep Playing or the Powat Toys or things like that, those are still going strong and have several years of backlog now that since we've released this DVD. So I'm pretty proud of it. Vink's pretty proud of it, and you know we're gearing up for our next disc. So the other thing that you should keep in mind is that if you have bought the DVD through our site, is that we are thinking of offering a discount to anyone pre-ordering season 2. So you should keep an eye out for that in the future as well.
But anyway, we plug this enough.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, that's enough.
I think anybody who wants it knows already. So, and for those of you who bought it, sorry for doing this. Next time we'll warn you when we're about to plug it again, so you can just you know, jog your iPod forward about 2 minutes and avoid all this nonsense.
Yeah. So, but
really looking forward to Tokyo Game Show.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Which Nintendo doesn't have an official presence at.
Which is Nintendo just makes so many decisions that just confuse me.
Well, wasn't this originally like a Sony show or something like that?
No. Nintendo used to appear at Tokyo Game Show.
Did they? Interesting.
I guess I might have my history wrong, but I thought Nintendo divided from Tokyo Game Show to do its own thing, the Space World.
Oh, that was back in 2000, wasn't it?
There were a few Space Worlds actually.
Okay.
Well, the last one was in 2000.
Right.
But it was held at the same location just later on.
Okay. Well, that link is finally making its way into Skyward Sword right here.
I really thought that Nintendo would try to get back into Tokyo Game Show, though, a few years back. Because if you remember, there was a major announcement at Tokyo Game Show.
Was there now?
That's when the controller was unveiled.
Oh.
The Wii controller, sorry.
Yeah, I was like, which one? Because the Wii U controller was in E3. I didn't know that. It must have been 2006, 2005? 2005 must have been then, right?
Wait, the Wii controller was E3?
No, the Wii U controller was at E3.
Oh, the Wii, yeah. But yeah, it was like the Tokyo Game Show before I went to. And I figured, but like usually Sony has the keynote, although Microsoft had one.
Right.
At one time. And this year, there's a few different companies making keynotes, and we need to register for those.
Oh, yeah, right. Good plan.
Yeah,
good plan.
Get on that, but...
Well, you know, I think, especially with the way that things have been going for the 3DS, people have been wondering, and this is before the Wii came out, this was happening more and more because you had the N64 and then the GameCube, and even though I think personally the GameCube was one of the greatest machines of all time, the sales numbers probably beg to differ. And around that time, before the Wii was announced, especially actually when the Wii was announced, people are like, oh, Nintendo should just, you know, throw in the towel and stop making consoles, stop making hardware.
Go
third party. And the 3DS is just more proof of that. Well, I think our little news at the top of the show is a counter to those calls. And I think more importantly, one of the reasons Nintendo would never do this is because it would just fundamentally change what they are as a company.
Definitely.
We have to, like,
their corporate
history to explain
completely.
Why.
Nintendo is leaving a lot of money on the table. I mean, I think we can admit that, right?
Oh, well, I can admit that. I don't know if they can. They seem to be incapable of limiting that.
but Nintendo's properties are so popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there was a number of, let's see, this was back in 2006, maybe 2007. I think it was 2006. Nintendo had announced that they were doing a Nintendo content to cell phones, and it was huge news. Every site was picking it up, like in Japan. And in the end, it turned out that it was like ringtones and wallpaper. But like, people were really hoping that it was going to be like Mario on a cell phone. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It was a subscription service. I was actually a subscriber for it for, well, longer than I thought. I thought I was subscribing for a month, but I was actually paying for it for about 2 years without using it. I just didn't know. But
wow.
But it was ringtones and stuff like that. And not that interesting. Only for Japanese cell phones. Only for Japanese cell phones.
Right, right.
I think it's done now. I don't think they do it anymore. And then our second thought of Nintendo possibly being on cell phones was a lot more recent, when they released that Pokemon Pokedex thing for the iPhone and the Android.
Mm.
And everyone's like, Pokemon! iPhone! You know? A lot of people were really excited about that. Nintendo stock went up.
Yeah.
When people thought it was coming. And it went right back down when Nintendo announced, no, we're not.
Yeah.
That's just Game Freak doing... Because, you know... Pokemon, a lot of people think Pokemon is Nintendo owned. It's like Nintendo co-owned. Like, they have exclusive rights for it to be on Nintendo systems, like the main games and stuff, but it's owned by Game Freak.
Right.
And they can, you know, they can do what they want with the property as long as it doesn't infringe on Nintendo's exclusive, like, regular series game contract. But there's been Pokemon games on Sega systems. Yes. Let's let that sink in for a second.
Wait a minute. The hell you say?
Okay. Now, it's clearly not what you think it is, but how do you think there might be on a Sega system? I'd like to hear your thought on this. Because I haven't told you this one before.
Are they chows? I don't know.
No. Chows. No. No, what are you doing? Stop it.
Sonic Adventure, and you had the Dreamcast VMU, and you could raise your chows that way. So I figured maybe...
Okay, yeah. I can see that, the Pocket Pikachu type thing. No. These were software released for Sega hardware.
Okay.
Now, the fact that I'm not mentioning any system names is probably a good indication.
Hmm.
Okay, let's try this.
Was it like
for Sega's last supported hardware?
Well, they were in on the Triforce, weren't they?
They were part of Triforce. We'll talk home hardware. Home hardware.
If
anybody in our audience has already picked this up and knows what I'm talking about, you guys are total nerds.
Yeah,
and,
boy, do I feel dumb.
And I salute you. I salute you.
I feel like if I say Dreamcast, it's going to be too obvious, and you've already sort of shot that down. So I'm guessing it's not the Dreamcast.
It's not the Dreamcast. Okay. Now, let's think of any hardware that Sega supported after the Dreamcast was already gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, apart from the Triforce arcade hardware, I have no idea.
All right. Okay, this is kind of a trick question, because it's a hardware that you'll think, aw shucks, when you hear it, because you've probably... But it's the Pico.
What the crap's a Pico?
Oh dear, it's their educational system that Sega released. It did come out in America. It came out in America, but it kind of fizzled out before the Dreamcast was even out. Well, maybe near the beginning of it, but Sega continued to support it up until like a couple of years ago.
Wow,
it's an 8-bit. I think it actually has some of the internal guts of the Master System.
Wow.
It hooked up to a television, and the cartridges looked like books. They were like a cartridge at the bottom, and on the top it was like a picture book, and it was like touch pen based, and it would interact with the TV. It looked like a big drawing tablet.
Okay.
I have one of these. And on it there were Pokemon games.
Wow.
and Sonic games, but everything was like with like an educational, with like an educational a bend to it. You
sure,
know,
sure.
Okay, lots of things, Disney titles, just all kinds of stuff.
Well, I think one of the reasons that people keep saying this about Nintendo, they should do something like that, is because of, you know, the iPhone market, the cell phone market in general is just so huge, and you can make a lot of money at it. And and I don't know. I guess it was maybe a more persuasive argument when Nintendo wasn't making money in the console market. And yeah, they're at the end of the Wii's life cycle, and so they're not making as much money as they used to. But they had a huge hit with that. And I think, as long as they can keep that momentum, they have a better chance of making more money this way. And you mentioned Sega. I think one of the reasons that the Sega argument falls flat is that how well did Sega do after they started publishing their properties on third-party systems? I can't remember the last Sega game I played. Can you?
Mad World.
That was Sega?
Yeah.
I didn't play it.
You know, that's why we can't have good things.
No. When Sega first went third party exclusively, I was picking up things like their GameCube version of Sonic Adventure 2, because it's on a Nintendo system. How can you not buy Sonic on a Nintendo system? But that was like one of the only things I bought, because honestly, Sonic games after the 16-bit ones are all crap.
Well. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't play Sonic Colors. I heard good things about it, but that's the Sonic cycle all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
You're familiar with the Sonic cycle, right?
No, maybe not.
I think it was. It's like an internet thing. Like someone there's a picture of a graphic. It's like new Sonic game announced. People get excited.
Oh.
More information released. Doesn't seem to be any of Sonic's friends. People more excited. Whatever. You know, cautiously optimistic, and then it comes out and everyone says they'll never buy another Sega game again. And then a new Sonic game's announced and the cycle begins again.
Oh, dear. It's like that Mega 64 video where they're all eating at a Sonic, talking about how terrible the food is. Hint, it's about the food. Oh, great. Now I have to link that one, don't I?
Probably. Every time you reference something, it goes
in the show notes. Yeah.
If you guys, if there's ever anything you guys don't understand, those of you who just listen to the podcast, some of it maybe is a bit obscure, and we try to clear anything up that we reference. If you go to the website itself, famicomdojo.tv, and click on the different podcast ones, we have, for some of them, pages and pages of show notes that like explain these things. So if you've been confused by anything we've mentioned in a previous episode, go there. We link to articles, YouTube videos, and just whatever you need to actually pick that up. And while you're there, please leave us a comment. We'd love to hear it. We'd love that.
And of course, use your promo code to buy the DVD. Oh, I had to slip that one in there. I'm sorry.
Sean.
I know.
Okay, for those of you who've already bought the DVD, please reverse your iPod about 30 seconds now, and then skip it.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. We should have warned him before.
I know, okay. Right? So, two of our previous episodes especially about the movie games and the games about movies, we have like links to like all the trailers, Rotten Tomatoes scores, IMDb pages, all that stuff, so you can get some idea of what we're talking about and don't have to be terribly, terribly lost by these films you may not have heard of or haven't seen in a really long time.
To tell you the truth, for a lot of the podcasts, it would actually be in your benefit to read these notes and watch these videos and things before you listen to the podcast, because instead of being confused and figuring it out later, you'll be in the know
from the
beginning.
That's right. So if you're just listening like through iTunes or you know the regular RSS feed, you really do owe it to yourself to go to the site and read up more about this stuff, for sure. But then to know our opinions on certain things, like whether Nintendo should ever become a third-party company, and the answer is no. But why? We should probably quantify that a little bit more.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, I would love to have Nintendo games, like, like virtual console esque experiences on every device I own, like my toaster, my microwave. You know? But the thing is, there is some kind of, well, okay, you're an iPhone owner, Sean, right?
As of early March, yes.
Okay, and did you buy any of the Sega emulated, like the Genesis titles on there?
You can do that.
There's three of the Sonics, and I bought the Phantasy Star and Shining Force games that they had ported over.
Wow.
And those actually work really well.
Interesting.
Because you don't need I don't know. I can't imagine playing Sonic on a touchscreen. I'd rather play it with a controller. But like
this is a strategy
RPG, not a big problem.
Sure. Wow. Well, no, I mean,
and Shining Force is awesome on the iPod.
Huh.
Because it saves anywhere.
Well, I have a lot of these ports already, but I have them for my Wii. You know, like that's an amazing plethora of just archive of 80s and 90s games from all different kinds of systems. Like I've never seen anything like it on any other console I've owned. That you can buy stuff for not just rival companies, but like a lot of their back catalog. From like the Sega Master System, Sega Genesis, TurboGrafx, Neo Geo. That's just crazy. And our arcade ports even like that. That's how we get some of the footage of arcade games for the videos. Is from the Wii Virtual Console, and nobody else is doing anything like that. Like they're making like HD versions of games that might have been released on different consoles, but.
Well, like, actually, the PlayStation Store, you can get a lot of TurboGrafx and Sega titles through right now.
Oh,
and, of course, their own software, the Sony stuff.
Naturally.
But like, the only place you're going to get the Nintendo stuff, though, is from Nintendo. And the only place you're going to get the Sony stuff is from Sony, you know.
Yeah.
But Sega and the TurboGrafx, will you give us money? Please. Back catalog. Yeah.
Well, I mean, There's still the question of, why does Nintendo just do this and just release their software for everyone else and not be in the hardware business anymore? Why does Nintendo release any hardware at all when there's these obviously superior, this is all tongue-in-cheek, platforms out there? And they want to worry about it. There's no R&D costs involved with that. They can just make the games everyone loves and everyone can love them for their PS3 or their Xbox 360 or their iPhone.
I think Nintendo and Apple share a lot in common.
Well, that's the truth.
Well, and that software is important to them, definitely. But like software, one of its main things is just to push hardware.
Yep.
You know, Apple with the iPhone, which may eventually, and of course every other phone is following suit with this, having the app stores and stuff, and having games for like no amount of money,
mm-hmm.
Very cheap. It could be the coming of the next video game crash, when there's so much stuff out there and everything spreads so thin and no developer can make enough money to cover their game costs on 99 cents each. Yeah,
right.
It might. But like the thing is, Apple, even if that Apple doesn't care, you know what I mean? Because
right.
I saw a statistic that like only like 4% of Apple's revenue actually comes from App Store sales.
Yeah, which makes sense. It's like nothing.
It's like nothing. They everything is hardware.
Yeah, just think of what you pay for an iPhone like month after month. Like, sure,
exactly.
You might get it for a couple $100 up front and think, that's all the money that Apple's going to make from that. But you got to think, sure, there's like plans for the minutes and there's plans for the data and everything like that. But you got to realize that like Apple gets a cut of that. It's not just, going to Verizon or AT&T or, wherever you get service through in your country. They get a cut of that. And so you paying month over month is almost certainly more than you pay for games. I guarantee.
Well, exactly. I mean, An iPhone off contract is like $600 or something. And,
I'm gonna try to buy an iPod Touch and they'll pay about the same price.
Exactly.
Way more than any console.
We're using iPhone right here, but the same applies to anything. The Galaxies from Samsung, the Droids, any of the Android phones, you know, the companies don't care so much if you buy a lot of software, but they know that the way to get people to buy more hardware is to have a plethora of software.
Exactly.
So I mean, I'm sure Apple doesn't mind that I don't know, it's probably not 4%, but it's like well under 10%. But anyway, Apple doesn't care that they're getting money. Okay, let me take that back. Even like 4% of Apple is like $1 billion or something. You know?
Right. For a company that has more money than the U.S. government on hand, that's probably.
So I'm sure they care about that money. But at the same time, it's to drive the hardware sales. And Nintendo's always been kind of the same way. You know, they have never sold hardware at a loss.
That's right. Even with the 3DS price drop, that's still the case.
So the thing about software is Nintendo, of course, makes plenty of money off software, but Nintendo owners, you know, Nintendo's okay if they only buy a couple games a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which is why the, you know, the Wii effect of attachment rate being so poor on it. You know, the joke is that nobody makes money on the Wii except Nintendo.
Because the thing is, Nintendo would release these games that were, you know, these evergreen titles like Mario Kart and Smash Brothers, and you know the Wii Sports series, and people and a great deal of their customers were only buying those games.
Yep.
But that was okay because Nintendo made its money on the hardware, you know.
Exactly.
And then these games, of course, that helps too. But the thing is, Nintendo's always made more on hardware than it has on software.
Yeah, I mean,
especially considering they're not getting as much third-party licensing because people aren't buying third-party games.
Isn't the way to look at it? You know, back in the day before Nintendo was in the hardware business, they were doing things like making arcade games that, you know, they
yeah, didn't exactly
make the hardware themselves. I don't think did they
for the arcade games.
Yeah, did they?
I think in a lot of cases they used existing hardware, but I think I think that the machine that Donkey Kong was on was actually a hardware either made by Nintendo or custom ordered by Nintendo.
I mean, they were the thing is though is that was all enough for trying to get into the market, and when they wanted to get into the home console market, you know, they did so in a big way. They researched that for a long while. They had those the color TV games,
yep.
You know, but that was still in a partnership with I want to say Panasonic. I don't remember exactly.
Someone. Sorry, which one?
Was it the who did they partner with to make the color TV games? I don't remember.
Oh gosh, I'm not sure. It wouldn't surprise me if it was Panasonic though.
But that was a predecessor to the Famicom, which, you know, they did do hardware deals then and still do with, you know, certain companies to make chipsets, but you know, they designed the hardware themselves. I mean, they were first and foremost a game company, as in, you know, like card games and quirky devices in the 70s and so on, and they made even before the NES came out in the US, they had the Game & Watch series, which pioneered the directional pad. You know, they spent a lot of time trying to break into this market, and you know,
definitely
when you don't have $5 billion to drop like Microsoft does, that's the way you got to do it. So why would they turn their back on it? You know, the software that they make, think about it this way: the software that they make is less to make good games, which, you know, they still want to make good games, but it's also like showcase the hardware they put out.
And definitely.
That's why you don't see 3 or 4 Mario titles per generation on a single console, because they put out their one that showcases the hardware and they're probably going to be done with it.
Like, I don't know. I liked Wario. I liked Wario for the Wii. I think you did too, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think it was my favorite after, you know, the original Game Boy Advance version.
Exactly, but you gotta keep in mind that, like, it was maybe not the Wario game that they wanted to make as much as it was to showcase the controller.
Yeah.
It was the big showcase for the controller.
Absolutely.
And sometimes the motion controls get shoehorned into games that they never should be a part of.
Twilight Princess for Wii.
Shake to Spin in Mario.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Like in Mario Galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, I love Mario Galaxy. I love it. But, like, the interaction with the... And connecting stars and stuff, the pointer functions with the Wii Remote on that game were great. Wonderful. I love that. But, like, shake to jump or whatever, I never thought that enhanced the experience at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Mario Galaxy is, don't get me wrong, Mario Galaxy is one of my favorite games of, like, ever.
And the thing is, even, like, when Mario Kart came out, like, you can play it with the Wii remote, but why? I always use the GameCube controller.
I use the Wii remote, actually, because if you're, 'cause I like to use the bikes, and if you're using the bike, you can do tricks by rotating the controller.
Yeah, but you can also do that by pressing up or down on the directional pad.
No, I think some of it is motion specific.
I think I disagree with you there, because I haven't had a problem executing moves on the Wavebird.
Maybe you just have no moves.
You just have no moves. Well, I have the same.
I could
the same
be.
Issue
I could be wrong there. I
Smash
could be
Brothers,
wrong there.
You know, Smash Brothers. I use the Wavebird as well.
I can see no special reason to use the motion controller on Smash Brothers. I use a regular GameCube controller on that. Oh,
yeah.
Maybe this is a good point to bring up GameCube controller and Wii compatibility ending.
Okay, I heard we just talked about this in the PowerCast, which will be out before this episode here. It sounds like it's only going to be in Europe, is what I was told. Maybe
so
wrong.
Far.
So far.
But come on.
Okay.
If it sells well in Europe, maybe. Yeah. Oh. If it sells well in Europe.
Right.
If it sells well in Europe and it's something we don't like, it'll definitely come here. But if it sells well in Europe and it's something we want, Nintendo will continue to deny it.
Oh dear. Yeah, I don't know if anyone heard, but the reviews for Xenoblade have been really phenomenal, and Nintendo's been chastised. Nintendo of America specifically has been chastised for not bringing that game over.
A 91. I mean, it got. I mean, these are reviews. Like, I was reading them, and they're like the revival of Japanese RPGs. It's like, this is the game, you know, like, better than Final Fantasy. Now, I don't know how much of this is hyperbole, because some of it is probably based on... Okay, can I do an obscure reference, Sean?
On this show? Okay? Never.
You're familiar with Terry Gilliam's films?
Absolutely. Brazil is one of my favorite. Of course, he's a Monty Python, first and foremost, but...
And this is the movie I'm going to refer to as Brazil.
Okay.
Now, it won like best picture, best director, best writing or something from this group of film critics. But like, part of the reason was because it is a wonderful film. I mean,
I love it.
It's a wonderful film. But part of it also was the nature of sticking it to the man.
Right.
Because if you know anything about the history of this film, Terry Gilliam wanted to release his full uncut version, but they wanted to make a version like with a happy ending or something, because test audiences like weren't like into it. Well, Universal didn't want to you know support a movie. They felt it was too long and that it was, you know, just not going to make back the money. So Terry Gilliam scheduled like kind of like an underground like showing of it, you know, kind of like he invited all these film critics and they watched it like, I don't know, in an apartment or something, broadcast on a bed sheet or something. I mean, I'm not even sure if I'm exaggerating here. I think that's actually what happened. I have to look it up.
Oh,
but
dear.
What happened is right after this, and this movie hadn't been released in theaters yet.
Right.
Okay. But they awarded it like their top three awards.
Wow.
You know, and part of it I'm sure is because, you know, it's one of my favorite movies ever. Okay.
Sure.
I'm gonna put that right out there. But at the same time, I can't imagine it ever winning any major awards. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's not the type of movie that like mainstream people watch, you know.
It is a little weird.
It's weird and it's odd and it's a movie you got to watch a couple times before you know. If I was a critic, yes, I would give it that. But you know, you know what I'm saying here, right?
I'm not really sure where you're going with this, actually, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the critics gave it like their highest awards of the year.
Okay,
you know they had it win a number of awards, but would they have bestowed the same honors of it if they would have seen it in a mainstream release in the theater?
Okay, so you're saying. The only reason people are saying this about Xenoblade is because people in America can't get it.
Now, I don't know about that, but I think part of it is to embarrass Nintendo.
Okay.
Now, don't get me wrong. I think it's a great game. I have played part of the Japanese version. It got good reviews here in Japan. Not as good as it's getting outside of Japan, but like it got good reviews here. But when you read the reviews of it from the European press, it's, you know, it's the second coming, you know.
Right.
But the thing is, I totally support those reviews, just like I supported the Brazil reviews, because sometimes sure. you need to use hyperbole in order to get something out there that should be out there.
How are the sales doing? Do we know that?
Well, that's the thing. As I told you earlier in the podcast about British sales, it's very hard to pin a number on them.
Okay.
It seems to be doing well, but the thing is, there were low expectations of this game originally coming in, so retailers didn't order a lot.
Okay.
But I guess they've been selling out. You know, some retailers have been selling out of the game. Part of it, you could say it's, you know, the sales are more than expected is I think a safe thing to say.
Sure.
Like it took retailers by surprise, but the thing is, you got to consider that lately, I mean, a retailer might have the pent-up demand is 5 copies and the retailer only ordered 3. I mean, it's, you know, it's not great sales, because Nintendo set the expectations so low of what one of their titles can do that it's hard to say if the sales are great or great considering. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure, sure. Well, one way to find out is they, you know, print more copies and see how many of those sell as well.
But either way, like, it's, I think you can consider it a victory, because unlike games like Disaster, which was a great game that came out in Britain and Nintendo was using to gauge whether they should give it an American release, you know, that game didn't do well. It didn't sell the few copies they put out there, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
But this game is. Whether it's enough to convince Nintendo, I don't know, though. Like, Nintendo is so that company that would they actually, even if the sales were good, not release it just to avoid the embarrassment of having to say that they were wrong?
They are Japanese. It's true. Yeah.
Not Nintendo of America.
Yeah, but you know, people have sort of leveled the accusation that they're just not much more than a mouthpiece for Nintendo of Japan anyway.
It's true. It's true.
So if those guys, you know, don't want it to happen, NOA is not going to buck the trend.
But I'm still waiting for Mother 3. So
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think it's reasons like this that people are eager for, you know, Nintendo not to have control, that kind of control over their own hardware like that, because if it weren't up to them, you know, because Wii's on a decline, so that's like another reason not to release a title that's you know, won't help with sales for a system they don't really care about anymore. I mean, I can cite other examples, like the 64DD, you know, made, developed, released in Japan, never came out in the U.S. One could say people were looking forward to it. I was, anyway. And I kept annoyingly writing into IGN at the time, like 1996, 97, was it? Like, you know, why is Nintendo doing this? They're so dumb. They should have waited to release the N64 until this media was ready and blah, blah, blah.
Because we all know that zip discs were really the future of gaming.
there are certain factors to consider. Like, the zip discs are probably cheaper to produce than the cartridges. They already had more storage space on them than I think any cartridge that ended up coming out, or at least equal to.
No, like Perfect Dark would not have fit on a 64DD cartridge.
Okay.
Resident Evil 2.
Well, because you got to remember, because I think it was 64 megabytes, not megabits.
Correct.
And so when you think about that,
512 megabits, right?
Maybe.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, 512 megabits. 64. I think the biggest cart was either that or 256.
Something like that. I don't recall. Okay, then maybe it would have.
Yeah. So I mean, and so you would have thought that would, with the save capability as well, you know, you don't have to do the battery backup save anymore, which you didn't have to. Some games still did that, but you also had the memory cards.
It's the Famicom disk system all over again.
Yeah, and I think they were afraid of that either, you know, through copy protection or just the proprietary nature of the format that they just you know, I don't know. It's like Nintendo's really good at killing things that they've developed and don't feel like is going to be of whatever measure of success is going to be, whether it's hardware or in this case, potentially games that they don't feel, you know, but this kind of goes back to the whole region locking issue, because if we could just import it from England, it wouldn't be such a big deal, potentially.
I don't know. Something interesting. Sites have been posting, like mainstream sites have been posting guides on how to hack your Wii. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that?
Yeah.
Well, Famicom Dojo takes no official position on pirating. Okay. I think a sale is a sale.
Yeah.
Go ahead. If you buy the game, Nintendo gets the money for it. That's just a fact. Okay. Maybe they don't get the money for you buying a PAL system, which you couldn't run in your NTSC set anyway. So there's that too. But if you're willing to give Nintendo the money for their product and they're saying no, whose fault is that?
That's the way I see it. Legally, I think it's still a bit of a gray area. But morally, I think if you bought the game, you own the game, and you've hacked your Wii in such a way that it cannot run without a physical copy of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But modding is a gateway drug to piracy. I mean,
it's true. And you know, companies like Nintendo, Microsoft, all those will lock you out if they detect that you've done something like this, and they can and have done so.
Well, exactly.
And so I can't really blame them, I guess. But, you know, it's just another symptom potentially of they're not embracing more modern methods of distribution, which seems to include not having something for the cell phone market, even if it's just their classic titles available through emulation.
I don't know. Do you think it would hurt Nintendo? But I don't know. That's one of the things on the 3DS that they're pushing, though. It's like, you want to play original 2D Mario? This is the only game in town, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I do have to say that the 3D remakes are kind of cool. But, you know, Urban Champion, really? Come on.
That was one of the first releases for the Wii Virtual Console, too. It was in their original launch of that. Nobody has ever liked that game. Okay. There we go. There's going to be a Facebook group that's going to link to our podcast here.
podcast@famicomdojo.tv.
I'm sure there's some diehard fans of that game somewhere. Just because, like we talked about last week, if it was one of the games they got with their system when they didn't have money to buy games more than every couple of months, they probably played that game like crazy and love it, you know? But I mean, other than that nostalgia thing, it doesn't hold up very well.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, for all these reasons and more, I don't think Nintendo's ever going to go the way of Sega, especially because it didn't work out so well for Sega, to be honest.
Soon after that, Sega got bought out by Sammy.
Yeah.
But then Sammy's business started going really bad.
Didn't they like mostly make pachinko machines or something?
Mostly made pachinko machines and stuff like that.
So any
time a company has ever been bought by a company that makes pachinko machines, it's been bad. Aruz bought SNK for a while. Do you remember that?
Oh no,
they're mainly a pachinko manufacturer, and all they did was they kept the Neo Geo Pocket going for about another year, but all they released for it was ports of their like slot machines. It was so sad. It was so sad. Like the Neo Geo Pocket was done in America, which is sad because it finished shortly before Card Fighters 2, the superior of the series, was released.
Yeah.
Oh man, I loved Card Fighters.
Now
anybody listening to this, is if you're Googling Card Fighters and go, oh, they made one for the DS, don't do it. don't do it. It's not. No, don't do it.
Not quite the same thing.
No. Bad. Take the same amount of money you were going to spend on that game, go over to eBay, buy yourself a Neo Geo Pocket and Card Fighters for that, you'll be so much happier, and you'll have a Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah, and who hates Neo Geo Pocket? Not me.
To hate Neo Geo Pocket would have to be like to hate part of your soul. I mean, to not like it as much as another system, I can see. Because it, you know, lower amount of games released for it. But, like, I mean, feel sorry for it? Definitely.
Right.
But
right,
hate it? I can't see a gamer hating it. But maybe that's just me.
So I don't want to make any promises, but, you know, we've teased, wanting to talk about Mega Man for 2 weeks now and haven't done it yet. We're working on it. There's a reason for that. We are talking to some mooks to get some information about certain things, and once we get that information, I think you'll be happy. But I'm think we're coming around the bend on this new video.
I'm also going to give some of these Mega Man games a bit of a playthrough before we talk, because yeah. I want to see how much is just my nostalgia glasses talking, and how much is, like, you know, wow, Mega Man's still super awesome. I'm sure I'm going to find that Mega Man is still super awesome, but it has been a while since I've played a Mega Man game.
I know what I'm going to say about it pretty much in its entirety already, but my big problem, assuming it is a problem, is that I have not played any of them for the non-Nintendo systems yet. And I think I want to keep it that way to keep the spirit of the podcast pure, especially if you have, so we can do a little compare and contrast. Because that definitely has colored my perception.
Have you played the one for Neo Geo Pocket?
No. There was one?
It's good.
Oh, goodness.
It's pretty much boss battle after boss battle after boss battle. It's very interesting.
Oh, wow, okay.
It was not a traditional Mega Man game, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the thing we're trying to get at is, if we're going to talk about Mega Man, we're going to do it right. You know, we're not going to just, like, throw it together like we do these other ones, where we just have, like, a couple of outlines and just be like, all right, let's talk about this subject for 50 minutes or whatever. So I still think they're fun shows, but, you know, Mega Man, you know, big deal, right? Did you see that they were passing it around at MAGFest this year being 2011, of this like fan made Mega Man movie, which they can never sell, of course, because it's not their property.
No.
But they've sort of come to an agreement with Capcom.
I saw a trailer for it. It looked like surprisingly good.
I know. Oh, it's
for a fan made production.
I got to see part of it at MAGFest, and it was quite entertaining. I must say, and there was a lot of love and care that went into it, for sure. So these guys cut their chops on this movie and want to make other ones that people will watch. But that's a whole other discussion, probably, about fan made films.
Save it for next week, man.
Yeah. But so I just want to tease a little bit, because, you know, there is that, and we're obviously very excited about it. Just want to do it right, but also we're finally coming around the bend on part two of our 3D special. And again, that's another thing we wanted to get right before we released it. And you know, part of it's just scheduling. We just have so many other things going on. Like my usual video making time is taken up by, you know, love and romance and things like that. And that's not necessarily my own, but occasionally my own as well.
You're gonna have to qualify that.
Have to qualify that statement. I've been going to a lot of
weddings. No. Let it go. Let people. So that's our comments for this week. What do you think Sean's love and romance in his life counts for? Please write in. Fan fiction submissions are...
Yeah, slash fiction, accepted. Highly discouraged, which means you're going to do it anyway.
So
Rule 34, I guess.
But I mean, getting back to Nintendo, for one last point is, I don't think Nintendo ever wants to change it, and I don't think it would necessarily be good for the gaming community to change that. But one thing we have to look at, and a very important thing, is what the shareholders want.
Yep, for sure.
And at a recent meeting, they were like, the shareholders were like, Nintendo, release for other systems. You should do that.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's, like, you know, virtual console content, which, you know, given that they're trying to compete.
And Nintendo's doesn't have the high ground right now to go, oh, we're doing fine, though. We don't need to release on any other platform. You know, we're riding high on the hog now.
Can't really say that anymore. Can't really.
You know, because they just announced record losses. And now shareholders
are
like, hey, remember that stock, how it went up when we said we might have a Pokemon game on another platform? Why don't we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo's saying no.
No.
But I don't know. You know, I think I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one. I think there's a chance that Nintendo, that if the okay, With some qualifications. If the Wii U doesn't take off and the 3DS doesn't stay up, Nintendo's going to have to make some tough choices. Because remember when we talked about the future of video games? Like, consoles in general might not be the future. You know what I mean?
I don't buy any of that, honestly. Sorry. No, I mean that's two different arguments going on there. That's the classic PC versus console argument, heavily weighted in the PC side, and the other one.
I don't think PCs have much of a future either.
there's that too. Okay, but you know, then the other part of that's just
entering the post PC era and possibly post console as well.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that.
I don't think anytime soon, but. But I mean, you know.
Yeah, we're also in the post radio era and the post written word era as well, aren't we?
We're definitely entering the post bookstore era and.
My only point is that these things transform; they don't really go away, and they always have a place in the market. It's just not the dominant place, which is where everyone wants to be, but not everyone can be there.
So you think there'll always be a market for original portable systems?
Yeah, of course. Those won't be a huge market, as the 3DS may or may not be showing right now. But you know, I remember there being all that talk of the PSP is going to just trounce Nintendo, and it never did. And I'm hearing the exact same thing about the Vita, and I have no reason to believe.
The Vita's looking more and more like an iPod. You know what I mean? You know,
well,
they tried to
make the DSi more iPod-like, and did that work out terribly great? You know, I'm not buying it just yet. I'm not literally buying it. So, all right, you know, tell us what you guys think. You know, come to our website, famicomdojo.tv, as we mentioned before, come to our show notes, read them religiously, find out everything you want to know, comment.
And if you're listening to this podcast from 10 years in the future to find out which one of us is right, if it was me, thank you for supporting me while you're listening to this. If it was Sean, you know, I sort of agree with what Sean's saying right now, so I'm not entirely wrong.
Well, there you go. Perfect. Perfectly well situated.
I think I've covered 40-something Kevin's tracks well.
Nice. You're welcome, future Kevin.
He's having a hard time of things as well.
With Island of Japan being imported into the U.S. and everything. Yeah, I know.
Got way off topic this week.
Well, you know, it's all related, isn't it? So. But
it's all related, but I think we've moved a little bit into extended family.
That's true.
Some third cousins in there.
But come by our Facebook page as well and make sure that you leave us some awesome feedback there. Just follow us in general because we're always getting more and more people, especially when we school GameStop and their incorrect facts about the Famicom disk system. What else? Oh, Twitter, of course. We're on Twitter as Famicom Dojo. And we're trying to post interesting stuff there all the time, including the pictures I took with Felicia Day and Jeff Lewis. And last but not least... I'd be remiss not to mention that before our next podcast, the PowerCast will be releasing a commentary for the Masters of the Universe movie, which I'm in it, so that's why I'm plugging it.
You're in the Masters of the Universe movie?
No, I'm in the commentary, and I love this movie to death, but there's definitely some things not to love so much, and if you haven't seen it, you owe yourself the $5 on Amazon it costs right now to buy it and then listen to it with our commentary.
$5, and there's so many better things you could
I should also just mention the PowerCast more often anyway, because they do plug us every week, and we should absolutely do the same. So, especially because I ran that podcast for 2 years, you know, it's kind of my baby. kind of miss it a little. Haven't been on it as much as I like.
This podcast is plug-tastic.
I know. Right? All
right.
No one complained last week, so I'm just going to keep doing it.
Did you hear that, everybody?
That's complain. Right. Complain this week on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and our website, famicomdojo.tv. Oh, man. That was really good.
Oh, wow. Someone's already complained. Look at this.
I know,
you made
right?
my daughter
See,
cry with your shameless plugging.
Sarah's already unhappy.
Shameless plugging has caused my daughter to cry.
All right. We'll see you guys next week with Mega Man this time. I swear to God.
Whatever. We're going to think of something nice.
Retrogaming.com dojo. Podcast is in the house. Retro gaming. Oh yeah. Retro gaming. Oh yeah. Famicom Dojo.
You still there, Sean?
Yeah, I was trying to get a clean record of that.
Of this?
Yeah.
You want that? No?
Why not? I just songified something awesome. Yep, got it.